Do you have questions about American root work?
Have you ever heard of mojo bags or conditioning oils and haven't a clue what they do? Or perhaps just felt a call to conjure?
Well, grab a lamp and strike a light and follow us to the crossroads. I'm Dr. Hobb, a journeyman Memphis conjure doctor.
And I'm Silver Shadow, a Chicago area Strega witch beginning his journey into root work.
Welcome to Lamplighter Blues, shining a light at the crossroads of American hoodoo, conjure, and root work.
Don't put that thing on me, 'cause I'm going back to Tennessee.
Welcome back to Lamplighter Blues. Today we're going to be talking about some of the curios and dressed objects and prepared objects we use in hoodoo practice.
We have quite a list for our listening audience, so bear with us as we get through this. Depending on how this goes, we may break the show up into multiple parts. If we do, then it should be exactly the same as what we're going to do now, but I think we're going to start with why we dress objects, why we think the particular objects have certain powers, and how to use them. We'll go bit by bit through that.
Yeah, a lot of what we're going to discuss are going to be specific objects, and despite how many items we've hit, this is by no means an exhaustive list. We're just going to kind of make a quick sort of top-of-the-list survey of the most commonly used items, and like everything else we've done on the show up to this point, this is really just introductory material and to get everyone kind of an idea of where we're coming from and to get people kind of started on the subjects. And hopefully we'll be able to come back behind later with more detailed shows or if we get more guests on to talk about these things in greater detail or to elaborate more on the subjects.
Yeah, we have a lot of stuff that we do want to get to, things that are going to be a bit more complicated, but we don't want to just jump into the deep end and start throwing around terms or explaining curios, for instance, and why it's obvious to be included in these things until you would know what they are.
Right. So, well, that said, we'll get started on our little survey for today.
Right. So, first thing we are going to talk about is why we decide to dress certain objects. For me, when you're talking about having these kind of lucky charms on you, which is, I guess, how a lot of people look at them, things like rabbit's feet and things, these objects inherently have their own power. They have a symbolic nature to them, and you know, some of them are kind of weird, like the rabbit's foot, for instance, doesn't really seem to match up with what it does to what it is.
Yeah, well, some of the stuff you hear about will be familiar, some of it will not be. Some of it has certainly found its way into sort of standardized, more traditional, sort of across the board Lucky Charm type things. And
right.
More of it is much more specific. Certain others are much more specific to hoodoo or to magical practice in general.
But why we dress these particular objects is when you dress an object, you're giving that object a purpose, a power, so to speak. Usually this is done with oil, depending on what the object is. If it's metal, oil's used quite a bit. If oil could damage it, then it will usually be smoked. But then it's still dressed or fixed. I guess dressed to me always seems to be oil, but fixed is really anything, either, you know, dropping powders on it, smoking it through incense, applying oil to it, whatever. You have cemented what that object is going to be doing and applied your will into making it do what you want it to do.
Which the item itself has certain, like you said before, the item itself, you know, there's no concept in hoodoo of charging an object with a purpose, really. Not kind of just, you know, empowering something. The things we work with have that intent already there. They have that sort of resonance already. And what you're doing is sort of augmenting that or really driving home, sort of quickening, yeah, that purpose for use. So,
okay. And how we do this, I sort of kind of went through already. We can do this by simply speaking over the object that we are holding. So, for instance, say you're trying to fix a large silver dime or a large silver coin, such as like a 50-cent piece or whatnot. The piece itself is representative money, but once we apply the oil for instance, like attraction oil or money draw oil, now the piece itself is currency. It has that, I guess, potential to it, and now we have given it the quickened spirit of draw more things like you to you.
Yeah, a lot of the times that'll be done with, you'll just use a prayer. A lot of times praying over an object to sort of call on It's innate aspects to help you and help you in a particular way. And like you said, dressing oil, you'll find some specific oils used. Van oils used pretty regularly for dressing the certain types of lucky objects. And things like Red Fast Luck Oil you'll see used. And, Three Jacks and a King or Gambler's. Gambler's luck type oil is used for certain types of things that are used for gambling luck and things like that. So there are some that have a long, long history of being dressed a certain way.
Absolutely. And with that, I think, is there anything else you want to add to that or just jump right in?
No, I think the best way to discuss this is to discuss the objects themselves.
Absolutely. So we'll start with silver dimes, one of my favorites.
Yep, silver dimes. Silver dimes, when we talk about silver dimes, a lot of the times in hoodoo practice, we're talking about mercury dimes. Which are the Liberty Head dimes. You found, when did they quit making Liberty Heads? In the 40s?
It's 1930s, I think, is the one that I have.
Something like that. They have gone out of production, of course. They went from the Mercury dimes, or the Liberty Head dimes, to the Roosevelts. And even the Roosevelt dimes, for a while, were still being made of silver. And you'll see them used occasionally. But most traditionally in hoodoo practice, you're hearing people talk about mercury dimes or liberty head dimes. And these are used very traditionally in protective charms, especially protective anklets. People would wear them to defend against tricks or powders laid down for them to walk over. You see them used in conjunction with devil's shoestring a lot. We have an anklet made from 9 devil's shoestrings and a silver dime, a mercury dime, that would be worn. And it would actually turn black to show that it had taken a hit when you had walked over, it would tarnish when you had walked over a trick laid for you. And so you would know.
Which meant, unfortunately, that you needed to get rid of your dime and get a new one. But at the time that these dimes were used, primarily, they were in circulation. I mean, you got change, and then, bam, you had another one.
Sure, if you got a dime, that's what you had. And now, of course, we scramble to find them a lot of the times, or it's something we have to watch out for or go looking for. And dimes are a common payment for graveyard work. They're a common payment for crossroads work. You'll see silver dimes used in a lot of different ways. I've used them successfully as ingredients in mojo bags. I've got a dime in my bone set that I use, a mercury dime in the set of bones I use to read. And they're one of those items that it's used wide and often, and it's pretty iconic.
Yeah. It's something that's been very popular recently, too. I know a lot of people are mixing up jewelry and things that now incorporate silver dimes. And I believe the condition that you are trying to create when you have that anklet, I think, was called Fear Not to Tread Over Evil.
Yeah, that'd be the one.
So, and I think they may even have oils and things that are key to that. So if you were getting an anklet, you could have that kind of oil.
Yes, through purveyors like Lucky Mojo, you can find specifics used for that sort of thing. And again, you can always fall back on something like Van Van, too.
Right, which really almost everything that we're going to talk about here, Van Van is a appropriate dressing for it.
Yep, Van Van, for anyone who doesn't know, Van Van is a multi-use oil. It was very, very well-known, very well-respected product. It's associated with the Algiers region of New Orleans, which is a sort of a suburb of New Orleans, and it was sort of hoodoo central for that part of the country at the time. It was sort of a low-end community, sort of a downtrodden community where a lot of conjurers were known to be. You know, you'd take the ferry across the river from New Orleans into Algiers to find a conjure worker. There's a lot of blues songs talking about that. And Van Van was a product of it's a product of that location, and it's still in use. It's still being made by a lot of high end high quality purveyors, and it's one of my personal favorites. I use it a great deal.
I think in general too, if you're not sure about a shop and you're not sure about the products that they make, ask them to see their Van Van. If you've seen good Van Van, a lot of them will have a very similar look, and it definitely will have a very particular smell.
Yeah, if you get into Van Van, it doesn't smell like lemon. It doesn't smell citrusy like lemongrass.
You got some bad Van Van.
if you get pink Van Van that smells like bubblegums or roses or whatever, you've got bad Van Van, and that's a good indication of the quality of the shop. That'd be a good benchmark. Yeah. Van Van's an all-purpose sort of oil. It can be used for uncrossing. It can be used for road opening. It can be used to dress charmed objects. It can be used to draw things in for good luck. It's a really, really handy thing to have around.
Yeah. And so, yeah, as we're saying, if you're trying to benchmark somebody, Van Van's a way to go.
Yeah, it's a good guideline.
So, all right. Anything else on silver dimes?
No, that's certainly not all that they're good for, but that's a good start.
Yeah, and pretty much anything with a currency type thing, like talking about large coins like dollars and half dollars and things, most of the time use that you would fix it carried on you in order to draw money to you.
Mm-hmm.
So just, I guess, keep that in mind. But the Indian head penny is a currency that is almost never used that way.
No, it has very specific uses. And again, if you'll Indian head pennies, again, there are pennies that are no longer being circulated, no longer being made. It's an older style of penny that has a Native American face on one side with a war bonnet and then the 1 cent stamp on the back. And it specific has very, very strong uses for keeping the law off of you. And it was used a number of different ways. You'd see it especially tacked up or glued up around the doorways of houses of ill repute or houses where questionable business was being conducted to keep the law away.
Yeah, and the idea here was that you would have an Indian scout that was looking out for you that would give you a heads up, warn you that this, you know, an officer was coming in, or that, you know, you were going to get a bad customer that was going to break up the joint, or that that would somehow get them to leave or not notice that this place existed.
Yep. And that's probably a combination of our it's probably a joint sort of influence from the spiritualist church, which had a lot of that Indian spirit guide sort of thing going on, and probably old Westerns, where we had this sort of romanticized idea of this, of the Tonto, sort of Tonto concept of this Indian, this Native American guide or scout or helper who was able to see and hear so much more clearly than we could. So, yeah. But they can be used very effectively as guards, especially, like I said, very especially for law keep away. They can be used in hands that way and mojo bags that way, or carried just by themselves. I want to say that that's how you carry yours, right? It's just one hit to a card.
Yep, it's sealed away, but it was dressed before it was sealed. But yeah, and you know, it's something you want to keep out of sight. Something that, you know, you don't want to let out. So if you were going to have it, for instance, and you were having people come in and out of your car, not something that you want to have like glued to your dashboard.
Hanging the rearview mirror.
Yeah, kept in your glove compartment, or, you know, under the floor mat or something like that, where it's hidden, you know where it is, but not everyone is seeing it.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back to any of our loyal listeners who heard the show we did on hands, on Toby's and Mojo Bags with Dr. E. You know, these are helpers. These are little spirits that are helping you out, and they can be injured by envious or spiteful people. So this is the kind of thing you kind of want to keep out of sight a lot of the times.
Right. So, but otherwise, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stories if you go looking for these particular instances where you have people gluing them, and, you know, buildings that had hundreds of them across every window and door. And
right, but this again goes back to the fact when these were pennies. You know, when you got change, this is what you got. So they were very, very common then, and they're not impossible to find now. They're fairly simple to find, but of course they're a lot more expensive than a penny. So it is the kind of thing you have to kind of go looking for. You will find occasionally.
Yeah, I usually get mine at flea markets and things. There always seems to be somebody who's selling weird coins.
Yeah, no shortage of people interested in old coins. So you will find you will find the Liberty dimes and the Indian head pennies fairly easily, and they're not super expensive like some collector coins are, but they're certainly not as simple to find as pocket change anymore.
Right, and they'll definitely ask you, you know, for instance, oh, actually going back to the silver dimes, you know, why are you so interested in the leap years? What's so significant about that?
Yeah, it's like them.
Yeah. But for silver dimes, one of the things that they had said about them was that leap years were considered to be particularly lucky. And so normally when you would look for one, if you had the choice, you'd always pick up the leap year. So, you know, when you walk into that coin store and you're asking the guy, oh, do you have silver dimes? Oh, yeah, you know, Mercury dimes this time. You go, oh, cool. What leap years do they have? And they'll give you this real side-eyed look like, what the hell would you want a leap year? You know, what happened during these leap years? It's so important. Like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, a lot of times you look for years because you'd want to match up the years. Originally, when that was possible, you'd want to match up the birth year of the client you're working for with the year of the coin. It's a little trickier now if you're doing work for modern people who weren't around when those coins were being minted.
And, you know, so. I still will match a dime if I don't have a silver dime. Mm-hmm. If I can get one with someone's birth year, I'll still match it.
Sure. You know, it's the little steps you take to make things more effective.
Yeah, more personalized. Also, I might alert you that there's a worker in your area if the guy comes in and goes, that's the second person today who bought me out of...
Yeah, that's why I was buying up all the silver dimes. Could be a warning flag.
You walk through the cemetery and there's a bunch of coins laying on graves. Another dead giveaway.
Yeah, I imagine the caretakers at my local cemeteries wonder about that occasionally.
Yeah, I bet. All right, rabbit's feet.
Rabbit's feet. I don't think that one needs a whole lot of explanation. I mean, rabbit's feet are sort of the quintessential lucky. Besides rabbit's feet and horseshoes are probably the two most common quintessential lucky items. You know,
right.
And everyone knows that. People have no idea that couldn't give a damn of whether magic is real or not. You know, you'll find carrying wouldn't maybe be shy about carrying a rabbit's foot on their keychain, and the rabbit's foot very specifically used for good luck. Just like everyone knows, that's basically how it's still used. You'll find it used a lot in gamblers' hands for specific luck. You know, not just for general luck, but specifically for gambling help. And a lot of times you'll see it paired up again with the red fast luck that we mentioned before, where you want to get it working, not just a general kind of slow, consistent luck, but when you really want your luck to be popping and hot.
A lot of times you'll pair that up with dice, if people remember from our Mojo Bag episode, where you'll have these things paired up, and, you know, this dice that really got you through, that got you the one roll you needed to really make out on that game, that would, again, be a curio that you would add to a list like this.
Yep. Just kind of pile up your chances. You can also add things like, you'll see things like alligator feet also used the same way. The little dried alligator paws will be used in a very similar way because they're supposed to grasp and hang on to money. And you'll see them used in conjunction or in a very similar manner where it's sort of gambling luck and bring money in, grasp money in, and pull it towards you. And you'll see them used like that as well.
Absolutely. And the other thing I thought was kind of interesting, too, is that the rabbit's feet used to be sold with Van when you would get them.
Yeah, a lot of times, and you'll still find them. You'll still find them being sold with a little vial of Van to feed them, to keep it dressed and keep it sort of going, keep it working for you.
Which I always thought was really interesting because in, you know, your common everyday culture, that sort of thing, just it's not in the, I guess, standard Joe off the streets mind that you should dress an object.
Well, it comes back to the point where hoodoo stops and the regular world starts. You know, that where the points where that line blurs, and that comes back to things like we talked about with a rabbit's foot or a horseshoe, where this is just something you do. You know, why does a guy playing dice talk to the dice or blow on them or rub them a certain way? You know, there's certain actions and behaviors, and you'll find the same thing with certain home remedies. Things that we see, that we know where they come from, that people don't know the roots of, but they use them anyway. They do something a certain way. Or sayings, you know, idioms, signs, basic things that are used in home life, sort of down country wisdom that we recognize as part of our magical tradition, but is just part of life for a lot of people.
Yeah. Why does grandma paint the porch blue?
Right. Why is the ceiling painted paint blue? You know, why do we paint the shutters? You know, why the bottle trees and things like that. That you'll find that are practices that are done without any sort of concept of thinking of it as a magical practice.
Right. And horseshoes by themselves have a kind of really weird mix because you'll get people who are in two different camps. One that say, if you hang a horseshoe, you have to hang it so that the points point down for in order to, like, bring the luck to the place that it's at in order to, like, drop it.
Yeah, and I was taught the other way. When I grew up, I was always told it had to be horns up, otherwise the luck would run out.
Right. Yeah, so you have this object that is two people will argue, you know, until they're blue in the face that the other person is wrong.
and I've not done any kind of real study on that to try to find out. That could be interesting to try to look into to find out where the roots of that are from. And it could very well be two different cultural contexts that the horseshoe was used in, or it could just been, you know, and because a lot of people I've heard, a lot of butter workers I've heard say it doesn't matter, you know, that the object itself has its use no matter how you hang it. And so maybe that was just that. Maybe somebody got that started, or somebody like was taught the way I was taught, and it got around. And
that was just the way you did it.
And sometimes everybody's an expert. This is the kind of stuff you run into.
Yeah, And there was a lot of other things, too, about horseshoes, because they were so prevalent, you know, back in the early 1900s, sure, that you could be walking on the street and you could just, you know, pick them up off the ground, a horse would kick a shoe. And there were a lot of remedies for that, things like changing your luck, where you would find the horseshoe that had been kicked off, and you'd say, okay, if I have bad luck, I put it into this horseshoe, and the next person that touches it, they're going to get my bad luck, but until then, I hang it with the shoe. You'd find a fence post, and you would, you know, throw it down and turn your back on it. And that was, you know, I guess another key, that if you find a horseshoe that's stuck in a fence, you should just leave it where it's at.
Yeah, there's a, that sort of contagious magic is used in a powwow a great deal. You take off, like for taking off warts, for instance, you can use a penny to remove warts, and you'll throw the penny away. And what will happen is the next person to pick that penny up will get them, will get the warts, and the person who was cured will lose them. And so you'll find that same sort of contagion used in that tradition. There's a very famous hill in Pennsylvania called the Witch's Head, Hexenkopf, in my very poor Pennsylvania Deitch. And it apparently was just a regular hill until this family of powwows started sending all these bad spirits and negativity they took off of clients towards this hill, and it became this sort of hellish place that people wouldn't go near and animals shunned because it was infested with all this badness.
It's like a pile of pennies that nobody wants to touch.
So...
wow. Well, yeah, you know,
that I've actually not heard that applied to a horseshoe. That's interesting that you have that same sort of contagion where you'll infect a thing. You'll, you know, drive something you don't want into an object and leave it for someone else to find. It's a very sort of, it's a very elegantly brutal way to do something.
And it's one of those things that's kind of double-sided too, when you're finding something that's on the ground, because, you know, if somebody had charmed a ward off, they just cast it over their shoulder, because that's one of the ways you'd get rid of somebody, is throw it over your left shoulder and then, you know, uh-huh, never look back at it. And somebody else is like, oh, it's my lucky day, I found this penny, and then, you know, they erupt in warts. It's not a lucky day after all.
My poor mother has just very recently discovered hoodoo through me doing some work for her, and as she's learning about this, she's sworn off picking up coins off the ground. She just said she's not ever going to bother doing it again after learning a little bit about it from the work that she and I were doing. She understands why some coins get left in certain places, and she's decided she's not going to pick coins up off the ground anymore.
Yeah. And that's actually something very interesting to bring up, because it happened to somebody that I know too. They were going through a public area. It was totally desolate. There was no one around. She parked in this parking lot and found a purse. And she was, you know, she immediately looked through it to see if it had a license so that she could, you know, contact the person, send them a letter, whatever, have your purse. It was totally empty. And she's like, wow, you know, this is a really nice purse. And she picked it up and she walked around with it all day, you know, because there was no way of returning it to whoever had it. And the moment she picked it up, she started having really horrible luck. And, you know, it's just one of those things that maybe that's why that purse got there to begin with, because somebody had it and they're like, screw this thing, I don't want to ever see it again.
Could be. You learn to look at things a little differently when you figure out that how people work, or when you see a different layer of things, you start.
Right. And eventually you'll get that, you know, I guess people are calling it the hoodoo sense now, where you're just like, something's wrong with that, I don't need it.
Yeah. Some people are more sensitive to that sort of thing than others. Some of it's just good, some of it's just common sense, and some of it people are a little more intuitive and can sort of pick up if something's been done like that.
The interesting thing about this particular story is that what she had done with it makes it kind of builds another story all by itself, because you know that somebody, it's going to happen to somebody again, is that she went back to the place that she found it and she put $5 in it. And she's like, you know, you seem to want to take money from me, or, you know, do these kind of damages. Here's money. Be on your way.
Yeah.
And when she did that, things like really settled out almost immediately. But now you know that somebody's going to find this purse, find $5 in it, no wallet, and they're going to go, wow, it's my lucky day.
Yeah. And it all starts again.
Yeah, so you know, eventually somebody's going to find a wallet or a purse that's got like $8,000 in it.
Well, you'll find stories of that sort of thing, of cursed objects getting passed from hand to hand. You know, you'll find old legends of that, even all traditions, really. The idea of a cursed object is not an uncommon sort of story. And usually a lot of times that cursed object will have some reason people want to have it. You know, there'll be some perceived
benefit. It's got $8,000 in it.
there'll be some perceived benefit. That does not outweigh the negative aspect of it. They just don't realize it at first.
Right. Well, you know, you see that penny and you're like, oh man, this is going to be great, I guess, or quarter or whatever.
Well, you know, we've been taught that whole, you know, the heads up penny thing. You know, people pick that up in a heartbeat. You know, that sort of the find a penny heads up, it's good luck. And yeah, you start thinking about why, you start learning about why people throw coins away on purpose, and you don't mess with things as much.
Right. Or at least, you know, rub some Van oil all over your hands first, and then you pick up whatever you want, I guess.
Smoke it on crossing incense.
Yeah.
Leave it in salt for a while. Something.
It's probably a little costly when you're picking up loose change to be burning crossing incense. I guess you put it in a bag, keep it outside your house for a while, and smoke the whole bag at a time. There you go.
Yeah.
That's a Quicksilver conjure cure right there.
There you go.
Loose change incense cleansing.
Yeah.
Kit.
Yeah. That's what you'll be known for one day.
Oh, that's not good. I'll have to come up with something much better than that. All right. Well, we got time for one more, if you can believe that.
Okay.
So, skeleton keys. This is all yours, buddy.
Okay. I like skeleton keys a lot. One of my favorite pendulums I use a great deal is actually a skeleton key that I've dressed and sort of consecrated for that use. Just a skeleton key hung on red cord, red yarn. That I like a lot. Skeleton keys are used to open things, obviously, so they can be used a great deal for that. One of my favorite uses is to actually consecrate one at a crossroads, and this is a trick I picked up from Conjure Mental Lee. I'm pretty sure he's mentioned it a few times on the Lucky Mojo radio show, where you'll take a skeleton key to the crossroads, and you'll bury it and leave it for, I think it's 9 days. And you sort of leave an offering with it, whiskey and cigars. It's a little more African tradition. And you'll go back, and it's almost a master key type thing where you'll go back and retrieve it, and you'll actually carry that key with you. Just put it on your key ring, or you can wear it as a talisman, and you have a blessed object that'll help open your roads and sort of guide you towards easier ways, drive you open ways towards success and well-being. And in general, keys open things. You know, that's their whole purpose. And a skeleton key is made to open lots of things. So you'll see it, all kinds of charms, lucky keys used as sort of road opening charms and good luck charms to sort of make sure your feet are in the right place and you're on the right path.
And I've also heard them used a lot for folks that are trying to help someone who's in jail or, locked up.
Mm-hmm.
That the person is there not because of something they actually did, because of something that's happened or whatever.
Sure.
And so you'll hear that a lot, that you should work with a key, turn it as if you were unlocking their gate and speaking over. I think it's usually used in tandem with, like, honey jars that has, like, the warden's name in it and mm-hmm. things of that sort.
Yeah, I've used them with sort of a reconciliation jar, too, as well, to open, you know, boundaries or closed hearts. I've used them that way as well.
Ah, that's a good one.
Yeah, where you see them usually in sugar jars. It's a little easier to work with the actual key itself because it's not so messy to get into as with honey or syrup. And they're good. I like keys a lot. Keys have a lot of uses, and they're easy to carry, and they're fairly – even a fairly – old-fashioned skeleton key is pretty inconspicuous. People just don't think much about it. And a lot of the old ones are iron. Yeah. And, of course, we've talked before about the sort of the potency iron has in of itself beyond its shape, the shape it's been worked into.
Right. I actually ended up putting some skeleton keys or just loose found keys in my road-opening candles. So that way, mm-hmm. once because we actually pour them into glass ourselves, so once you actually get to the bottom – you know, you have all of the herbs and things that were mixed into it that's been burned over this key, and so when you actually are done and it's cooled off, you have a talisman to hold on to.
Right, and you can incorporate it into a mojo bag, you can carry it on your key ring, you can wear it as a talisman. There's lots of things you can do because that thing's been sort of built up with the work that was done, and you have sort of a centralized focus for all that work that was done leading up to that, and that's a good way to do that.
Yeah. Oh, I liked it. I was actually a little bit afraid that the key was going to get hot enough that it would damage the glass, but so far so good. So
yeah. Well, it happens, but that's a clever idea.
Well, thank you. I was very excited about it. And somebody had given me a box full of keys. They're like, "You like weird things? Take this."
That's a much better idea than the whole spare change blessing thing.
Well, there you go. I got something. So, wow. So we made it through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We could do 5 in a show.
Well, we're not in any particular hurry, so.
Yeah. So we will definitely touch on this. We may turn this into a little mini-series that we'll run through because there's definitely a lot more to talk about, and there's a lot of cool charms. So
yeah, and as these shows start coming out, of course, like always, we encourage listeners to, you know, if you have feedback, if you have questions, we always encourage that. But when we're dealing with specific things like items that you may have heard, stories or folklore, or, you know, familial stories you may have heard, feel free to write us and share it with us. We'll be glad to talk about it. Or if there's something that you have questions about, something that your family or, you know, you've heard about being used as a good luck charm or a figure use and you're not sure why, we might be able to shed some light on it. We certainly want to take a crack at it.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, send those questions, comments, objects to lamplighterblues@gmail.com, and we'll take a gander at it. Also, we're hoping to build up enough questions to actually do a question and answer show. So send us those questions so that we will have something to talk about.
Yeah.
All right, well, with that, we will move to Secondhand Hoodoo.
Hello, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane.
And we're the hosts of New World Witchery, the search for American traditional witchcraft.
If you're looking for a show about magic, specifically North American folk magic, then come check us out.
Some of the subjects we'll be covering are hoodoo and root work, powwow, New Orleans-style voodoo, Appalachian granny magic, Ozark mountain magic, brujeria and curanderismo, and New England witchery.
In addition, we'll be having discussions about things like effective spellcrafting successes and failures, magic for oneself and magic for others, magical terminology, hexing, and being in or out of the broom closet.
If that sounds like the show for you, come find us at newworldwitchery.wordpress.com or find us on iTunes.
Thanks for listening.
And be well.
All right, welcome back, guys. Joining us today is Corey from New World Witchery.
Hello.
And, of course, we have Atticus Hobb.
I'm here, yes.
Indeed. So, what we have today is another run of my strangeness. And, of course, Corey, you're familiar with the way we do this.
I am. I'm terrified.
Excellent. That's what we like. So, what we have today is a model train set.
Okay.
Complete with tracks, goes in a circle. You have a little device there, turn it up and down, makes you go faster and slower. You have a full set of train cars minus one or two that have broken axles.
Mm.
So, assuming you can add anything to this that you can get out of your house your household, how would you use a train station or a train model in Hoodoo? Go ahead, Court.
Okay. I mean first of all, why couldn't I get the scales? Because those things were awesome. Secondly, train work is, it's pretty straightforward out of Hoodoo in terms of, you can throw something on the tracks and it can be run out of town that way. You can use the tracks to then disperse, dispel the ingredients from a spell if you need to do that. So I think this is kind of the miniaturized version of that, where you could sort of be creating an indoor altar space, assuming that you can't actually get to real train tracks for whatever reason. You could create this sort of indoor altar space and then run the train through that altar space, essentially, and put whatever you need to put on the tracks to run it out of town. You could, throw something into one of those empty box cars that you're trying to run away from you. You could do, for example, like a hot foot. You could run somebody out of town that way.
Okay.
But I think the more fun way to approach this. Maybe it's my sick, twisted sense of humor, but all I can picture is somebody tied to the tracks, like in one of those old Dudley Do-Right cartoons.
You can only do that if you have a waxed mustache, I've been told.
Apparently so. So I would imagine one of the things that you can do is put somebody in harm's way by using that same idea, by creating an effigy of them, baptizing the, a doll. A doll just seems like the easiest way to do this, is you would create a doll baby, baptize it in the effigy of them, and you put them in harm's way so that they feel the sensation of something bearing down on them. And now that doesn't necessarily have to be, a train. You're using the train to stand in for some other problem. So you could load the train up with all sorts of woes and worries and problems. You could, stuff bills into the car so they're being run down by financial woe and worry. And then, you just stuff it with, ripped apart, you make little cloth hearts, that you dress for themselves and their lover, and you tear them apart and you know, maybe singe the edges and throw them into the cars. And then you run the train and you run over the doll, if at all possible. I don't know how powerful the wheels are on this thing.
Good question.
If you can't do a doll, maybe you could do a paper doll to do this. I don't, that doesn't feel quite as effective to me. But at the very least, you could put a name paper down on the track, run the train over it, and every time the train runs over it, it's hitting them with this sort of overwhelming force of negativity and suffering, which is not, I say it's fun. That's probably not the nicest thing to do to anybody.
It's probably something you need to take a cleansing bath for afterwards.
I would imagine so. Yeah. That's definitely not a, you know, the hot footing, while negative, is probably the nicer of those options, but you could certainly use that to really bring some pain into somebody's life.
All right.
So that's my thought on it.
Excellent. Hob, what do you got?
Well, I guess Corey and I are in a similar mind tonight, because my thoughts aren't very happy either.
Give you guys the child's innocent toy of a train, and you're already trying to kill people with it.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily kill anybody, though that's a brilliant idea. what I was thinking was a really frustrating road closing.
Oh.
If it's the kind of train set I had when I was a kid, you can loop it into a circle. So it
absolutely.
So what I was thinking, a very similar vein to what Corey said, where you could load those cars with certain aspects, you could use that as a road closing. And it'd be a really obnoxious road closing, because you could lock them into a circuit where no matter how hard they try to get ahead or how hard they try to get away or how hard they try to progress, you can just have them keep repeating the same sort of really bad parts of their life over and over again.
Wow. Well, then.
just to throw the positive side of this, because I feel like, you know, both Hob and I are like, you know, this, you know, bring the pain, bring the bad, you know. I think you could just as easily do this, bring the good. You know, you could do a moving spell, like how they do moving candle spells. Basically, you set it up so the train moves a little closer to you each day, and it's loaded with good things, so your ship is coming in, and you have an effigy of you at the station waiting for it. You could do something like that, too.
Yeah, that was something I had thought about, was that the, as you were talking about before, loading up the cars, that you could put these open cars that, you know, like normally they have play rocks or sand or something that would go into them, you could load herbs or curios into them to represent different things, you know, gator paws with silver dimes in them, and master roots, and, you know, some of your bigger curios that you could actually ship around, and then have various points on the station itself that represents, like, for instance, road marks or landmarks that you're trying to get to in life. So, you know, you could load it up and then have it go from point A to point B, carrying things of, like, get a job. So then it would get to this location, you drop all those things off at, say, like, a candle or something. It seems a little weird, but, you know, and you could keep going through with this idea to pave your own way, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like making a train version of the game of life.
Right, there you are.
Yeah.
You could also do something like a Uncle Fester-inspired road opening, where you could load the train up as sort of the, almost like what Corey was talking about doing, where it represents these sort of overwhelming obstacles. And you could just, I don't know, blow that bitch up when it got to the right spot.
Right. Right. I like that.
Oh, man. You know, it brings back the Mama Star M80 thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could imagine using, like, a gunpowder trail on the tracks for that.
You know, oh, man.
Blow the shit out of your obstacles, man.
Do you have a wax mustache?
Let's say, since we haven't hit enough old movie cliches yet in this.
That's just impressive. Yeah, no, I mean, that would be cool, you doing blockbusters that way of, mm-hmm. again, you know, baptizing certain things in the name of problems, and then, I mean, if you decide to blow up a whole bunch of stuff in the way of getting your train to go from A to B, please at least take a video of it or invite me to your house when you're going to do this.
Right on.
That'll be impressive.
We, of course, are not encouraging such behavior, but...
And we take zero responsibility for any ridiculous thing you try.
That's right.
We encourage the responsible use of gunpowder and curses.
Indeed. Indeed. You guys got anything else on that one? Otherwise, we do have one more.
No, I don't.
I'm good.
All right. That one was a little weird. It felt a little closed, so we're going to do something that perhaps is a bit more open. And for this one, is actually an antique gavel. And you get the little wooden plate that it would sit on, too, that you can hit.
Okay. You know, look, Hobby, you want to do this one first?
Yeah, we'll let Hob go first.
Yeah, I get to jump on this one first, I guess. Well, the obvious thing that comes to mind is court case work, so I'm not going to talk about court case work.
Good man.
I would think Stop Gossip would be fun.
Okay.
Would be good for that. If you were trying to work either as probably as something you'd use with other Stop Gossip work, if you're doing a Stop Gossip jar or something like that. And while you were working the jar, you could actually use the gavel. You could dress the gavel and actually use it to sort of command people to be silent, to be quiet. Or for any other kind of bend-over work or sort of commanding work. Yeah, I think you could use it as an addendum to the same sort of work. And just hammer on that sucker while you're sort of giving your commands to the work you're doing.
I imagine it would be extremely satisfying being able to end every Fire and Brimstone statement with a whack of a gavel.
Yeah, just knock it and go with what you're doing. That'd be a good way to keep your rhythm, too.
That's true.
So that'd be kind of interesting.
Corey, what you got?
I'm going to attempt to avoid doing the court case thing, too, because, I mean, I feel like that, like Hobbs said, it seems pretty obvious. I think you can kind of come up with a lot of ways to do it for that.
Right.
I think, you know, gavel, court case, obviously, but you can also think of a gavel being used in, like, an auction setting. You know, it's something where you're selling something off to the highest bidder. And so there's a money aspect of it. You could do a money working to bring yourself financial gain, especially if you're involved in some sort of sales. If you're selling something, you could, you know, speak out the results that you wanted, and create. Essentially, you could create little paquettes focused on different aspects of, I don't know, like different kinds of sellers that you different kinds of buyers that you want to come into your business and buy from you. And so you name those buyers, maybe not after specific people, but you know, you want somebody with deep pockets to come in and get this from you. Sold American. You know, you're bringing that gavel down.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what's a good money psalm.
I only know about money keeping, and that's the putting in the 23rd.
Yeah, that's the easiest one. Yeah, I mean that's a good way to do it. Is, you know, there's a modified version of something Cat does actually, where you know every time that you insert a new dollar bill into the Bible in the 23rd Psalm, before you close that Bible, you bang the gavel and you speak that. It is a final thing. This money will not leave you. This money will stay with you. Money is coming your way. Money will not depart from you. Money will be always a part of your life. It will grow. It will increase. It will become ever more exponentially powerful, ever more exponentially growing in your life. Bang. God, bring me money. Bang. St. Expedia Day, bring me money. Bang. You know, whoever you're working with, whatever you're doing, you know, you bring down that gavel to emphasize the finality of you,
okay,
fortunes.
It seems almost like money commanding as well.
Yeah,
like court ordered money gathering.
Yeah, and I mean you could dress that gavel with, you know, with a good commanding oil. You could dress it with, you know, simply a good a fortune favor me, or as we were talking about earlier, you could do like a van or something like that. Just something that speaks to bringing a little luck your way, a little fortune your way. You know?
Okay.
And then when you're banging it, you're sort of releasing a little burst of that.
Now, strangely enough, when I saw the gavel, what was brought to my mind was how many of my friends have been married in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, maybe it's because I now have Millett's new book, and I'm just feeling like a happier, more gentle person. I immediately saw it and started to think about marriage work, and, you know, I now pronounce you man and wife, clack. So, or, you know, man and man, wife and wife, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing about it is, I think what each of us are kind of hitting on is that really what this thing does is make something final. It brings that aspect of, this is done, there's no way of undoing this. So either you have what you have, you know, you're keeping what is yours, or, you know, when you're making your demand, that demand is final. It is, you know, by the word of God or whatever, you know, you're thinking about when you whack that thing down, it is what it is now. It's manifest and it cannot be undone.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, maybe I just like hitting things with hammers, but something else that came to mind for me was something like how you'd extinguish the candle in a curse.
Mm.
Say the the Green Devil Pay Me spell, or you know, the black figural candle and a moving candle spell if you're moving someone away. You know, tipping, instead of tipping it off into graveyard dirt or into running water or whatever you're doing, just whack it. And that sort of came to mind.
Yeah, I could especially imagine that, Hob, if you, instead of just whacking it while it's standing upright, because I imagine that could get very messy very quickly, but if you, you know, lowered it down so the head of the figural was on the plate for the gap, mm-hmm. then it's almost a ceremonial, it's not quite an execution, but it's definitely a ceremonial attack.
It's awfully close, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know if I would do that, but...
I'm thinking of things you could do to skull candles with it, too. Sort of.
Oh, God.
with some pins and a gavel.
That would be very interesting, especially when you're talking about things like putting people in jail and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to use a gavel around the foot tracks and things, or however you're going to do it to bring people in there. I imagine that would help out quite a bit.
Think about using a gavel on a foot track.
Mm. Yeah, that's...
In the same way that you would horsewhip one to curse somebody. Think what you could do with a gavel on someone's foot track.
That would be cool. See, now I would want one that I know has sentenced someone to at least anything. It could be fucking a parking fine for all I care. It just has to have been used to sentence someone for some type of punishment.
I actually know a retired judge. I'm going to have to ask him if he has one.
Yeah. You're secondhand hoodoo closet. That's going to be... friend.
And I live in a broom closet, so that's going to be very difficult. So I start accumulating things.
Yeah. It's going to be very hard to explain. Is what it's going to be. Oh, it's a horse bridle. What the hell is this thing for?
Yeah. Yeah. I see some unhappy conversations from this.
You mentioned like the idea of like you want to get a gavel that's been used by a judge, and that, I don't know why, but sent me down this path of like the idea of divine judgment. You know,
okay.
And being, you know, being in or out of the favor of divinity or whatever. I had somebody one time approach me about they'd had a friend whose husband had died and they hadn't lived a particularly virtuous life. And so they were worried about the state of their soul. Now, being who I am and sort of the perspective I'm coming from, I don't mind helping somebody out kind of from their perspective. It wasn't, I'm not sitting there worried about them going through purgatory, but if that's what the, you know, for lack of a better term, the client is worried about. I can imagine, like, this could also be, you could use it to sort of soften the blow of justice, that you could find ways to sort of curry the favor of divine justice, just in terms of, you know, maybe letting it pass by you, maybe letting the hammer not strike would be some way to make that work.
Yeah, you could do something like swaddling the mallet, the gavel itself, and...
Yeah.
In something like calming herbs, healing herbs.
Yes, absolutely.
Or even wrapping it in something like bunting or cotton.
Yeah.
And, sort of putting it to rest, sort of using it where you can cushion it. And like you said, either avoid it completely or soften the way it's done.
Absolutely,
I think you could use that. Yeah, and I think you could, along the same lines, you could use it the same way. Since we've avoided court casework, use it the same way for court casework. You could probably use it in a very similar manner to help someone get a more lenient sentence, or to help someone get bail or to get out of jail sooner.
Absolutely. Or you know, if you've done something particularly wrong and you're aware of it personally that you've done something wrong, you know, you, like you said, you swaddle that, you put it, you wrap it in that, you know, that red flannel with herbs, sweet herbs, you know, the herbs that'll bring, you know, calm, peace, tranquility to you. Hyssop, I would say, you know, throw some hyssop in there, pray the 51st Psalm, and then lightly wrap it so that your punishment will be greatly diminished, so that it's all that's happening is that whatever wrong you've done is going to be atoned for, but not necessarily that you will have to suffer the slings and arrows of what you've done.
Hmm. I was actually thinking about placing something, you know, even like sugar between where you'd have that wooden plate and then, you know, this pile, so that even if you did hit it as hard as you wanted, it would, you know, both be a representation of being sweetened, but it really wouldn't make that much of a noise.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, you could even then let it rest after it's been hit in it, so that, you know, if you do end up having to go in front of somebody, they would take, they would be kinder to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. So, it's nice that we, you know, all of us, we all clearly start off and then like, curse the shit out of him, man. And then we kind of are like, but, but...
Well, the long and the short of it is that the most vile component we could come up with, we could probably find some positive work that could be done with it.
Right.
And that just is the nature of the work. It just depends on how you approach it. Because even things that seem really, really negative, you can do positive work with if you approach it the right way.
Yes. And clearly the most innocent of things you guys can do horrible things with, so...
Man, you gave us a damn train set. You deserve it.
When you were little, when you were sitting in front of that train set, that was probably the coolest thing you ever had.
I told you, I watched The Addams Family. I wanted to blow the thing up.
Oh, you're... I don't know about you anymore.
Uncle Fester was my hero, man.
Uncle Fester, was he the one that blew it up, or was it the...
It's Uncle Fester in Pugsley.
The father, because I was always...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was there, too. Yeah. Like blowing up trains. That's the idea that always appealed to me for some reason.
That's going to require a lot of disclaimer when we put this one out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We don't want anybody to blow anything up, but, you know, if you do, do it right.
Wow. Well, assuming that we are not put in jail after releasing this episode, where would you be able to find Corey?
You can find me at newworldwitchery.com. That's where we host the blog and the podcast. So...
Fantastic blog and podcast, by the way.
Thanks. Or you can email us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
Excellent. Other than that, you guys got anything else?
No, we're sort of on Twitter, but that's, I mean, we don't check it as often as we probably should.
Gotcha.
Just shameless plug, I am about to re-release the Cartomancy guide that we put out a couple of years ago. So
in paperback?
Probably. I'm working on the details of that. I've got about 1,000 words to finish up, and then I've got to finish the photo illustrations, which I've got about 50 to 60% done.
Well, but once that you was, have... go ahead, sorry.
It's sort of twice... It's actually more than twice as long now, and it's going to have an appendix that's a lot of folklore about cards. It's going to include a lot of... like the Soldier's Bible story about how the cards represent all the different figures in the Bible and things like that. So it's going to have a pretty big expansion on it. So just encouraging people to keep an eye out for that for sure.
Excellent.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, let me know when we can order that bad boy and I'll get two.
Well, awesome. You may not have to order them. We'll have to see how this goes.
Oh, the privilege of being... on a podcast that I run.
Well, man, I mean, I'm not looking for to curry favor, but I've been plugging that thing since I found it because it's certainly a big part of how I read now.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny because now it becomes a thing where if I do certain readings and things, me and Hobble go back and forth with it, and it's just like, oh, you know, the three of clubs, that's the barricade of the wall, and you know, it's just wild how fast it became into our vocabulary.
Well, thanks. That makes me feel great.
I mean, for anyone that doesn't know, the book he's talking about is the way that I read playing cards. When I started reading professionally, I was looking for a playing card method, and that's the one I found that worked. I found about a half dozen different methods, and that's the one that stuck. And I use it for professional readings now. It's a big. Almost every time I read, I use my playing cards.
Awesome. It's fun. It's a nice way to do it. I mean, I can't. You know, I picked it up from a lot of different sources, so I'm not can't claim complete credit for it. So
sure, you just made it accessible for people, which is extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still be able to get the original version for free, the short version. So if you want to learn the basics of it, then it's going to be there. It's going to be available. So
good deal.
Cool. All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Till next time.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Lamplighter Blues. Our show can be found at iTunes and lamplighterblues.wordpress.com.
You can also reach us via Twitter at lamplighterblue, that's with no S, or at lamplighterblues@gmail.com. Until next time.
Don't put that thing on me. Don't put that thing on me, 'cause I'm going back to Tennessee.